Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Institute for Personal Development, where total consciousness is the new frontier. Kriya Yoga is the union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices that initiate this process.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing great, too, as well. Thank you on this beautiful rainy day we're having here in Hampton. Well, I want to thank the listeners for tuning in. And today on The Voice of Yoga, we will be talking about some of the most common obstacles that are met along the spiritual path. We're going to discuss the role of leadership in relation to apotheosis. Swami will explain to us the split between science and religion and how that has affected humanity. He'll also reveal some of the tried and true methods found in the early scriptures and explain what it really takes to become one with God. So Swami, let's start off by explaining the obstacles for attaining enlightenment. So what are the four obstructions, and then how can we overcome them?
According to the system of yoga that we teach, there are four major obstructions to enlightenment. They are fear, ignorance, laziness, and selfishness. And basically, it is the development of the four elements experienced as our physical functions and our mental functions, fire, earth, air, and water, that we call upon to help us overcome these barriers to our union with this indivisible unified field.
So let's take these obstructions one at a time, maybe, and then so let's talk about the first one, fear. Why would somebody be afraid of attaining enlightenment?
Well, if you really cross-examine it and you think about it, our original experience of fear comes from our first birth. You know, that when our physical bodies, we are in the womb. We're in this utopitarian environment, and everything is provided for you. And then all of a sudden, you're catapulted out of, you know, this safe environment, and you're thrown into the light, and you're forced to breathe air on your own. So the body has this pattern of fear that is associated with this type of change. And so to literally rebirth your body now in a different source of sustenance, which is very similar to what happened in our first birth. So we kind of have that memory of the trauma that was associated with that. And so that becomes one of our biggest barriers to, you know, why we would want to give up what was safe, familiar, comfortable, and known. Because we, you know, once you are born, then of course, you know, you're trying to repattern, reprogram, and you acclimate yourself to your environment. So it's the pattern of the body that, you know, creates this barrier to why would I want to separate from what's safe, familiar, comfortable, and known. And then again, embark on, you know, the anxiety, the uncertainty of the unknown.
Well, that's interesting how that is the origin of fear. So once we become attuned to that, I guess, how do we overcome that so that we can continue on the path?
Well, that's why we have to be taught how to do this. You know, that's one of the things like that we talk about is the whole thing of you know, why humanity today, you know, why is it that, you know, we're chronologically aging and psychologically, spiritually remaining in this underdeveloped state is basically because we no longer have leadership that is educating us in how to separate from our dependency upon this very limited source of sustenance that we come in looking for, and not educating us in how to separate from our attachment to that, and then also giving us the tools and the skills, because it isn't going to happen instinctually. And that's, you know, where we, you know, we talk about the whole thing of the split between science and religion and how that has impacted us collectively and why we're not growing psychologically and spiritually is because we're not being taught how to do it. But once you understand the goals and objectives of what religion was intended to do, which is exactly what we're saying here, they were game plans, strategies to help us grow psychologically and spiritually. And it was all about getting reconnected to a different source of sustenance. And that's why we call it a rebirth. You know, because it's very similar to your first birth of your physical body. Only this one has to be done consciously and willfully. And then, you know, it's like we say, I mean, who wants to jump out of a perfectly good airplane? You know, I mean, so we really, a lot of times, you know, we opt for staying with what's safe, familiar, comfortable, and known. But if you understood, you know, that there was tremendous amount of benefit that would come with this, then, of course, it would create that window of interest. You know, why would I want to give up my dependency upon, you know, particles and waves, you know, my attachment to my need for external reinforcement, and, you know, what are the benefits of, you know, this internal connection? And good instruction provides you with, you know, answers to these questions.
I think that's a really good segue into the next obstruction, which is ignorance. So can you explain what it looks like when somebody is practicing avidya, as we call it in yoga, when it comes to attaining enlightenment? And then, of course, we'll talk about how to overcome that.
Yeah, avidya is basically mistaking, you know, one source of sustenance, the impermanent, for the permanent. And I think it was von Goethe who, I think, said it really well when he said, "None are more hopelessly imprisoned than those who falsely believe that they're free." You know, which is basically what I think collectively is happening. You know, that because we no longer have leadership, we no longer have, you know, clear distinctions between humans in the larvae state and humans in the adult state, now we're mistaking humans in the larvae state for humans in the adult state. And, you know, how you overcome this thing called ignorance is through knowledge. And it is associated with, you know, the element of air, intelligence. And a big part of, like, the work that we're doing is we're educating people, you know, that none of this is magic. It's not a belief system. It's not something that you believe in. But it's instruction to do something that you literally separate from your dependency upon duality, fear, and limitation, and then you reconnect to a more reliable source of sustenance, you know, truth and wholeness, this indivisible unified field that in quantum physics they call non-locality. But you have to rebirth your body in it, that it's not an intellectual accomplishment. Because the mind, again, and the realm of the astral plane can be just as much a barrier as our attachment to the outside world. And the way the Bible explained that was the whole concept of false gods. You know, that you basically were drawing from the wrong source of sustenance.
So when we've talked about that in other radio shows, so if they're longing for anything other than a connection with their divinity, then that would be considered a vidya. Right? If they're longing for the latest pizza from Domino's, that would be considered a vidya, right?
Yeah, the whole thing is that you can't do this in parts, you know. I mean, it's like you can't be a little bit pregnant, you know. Either you are attached to this other source of sustenance, or you're not. And it all comes down to like what we say: what is it that I desire? And one of the things that we do, you know, try and educate people with is the physics of spirituality, because you can't get this invisible, intangible source of sustenance in your body for validation if it is attached to something that is visible and tangible or invisible and tangible. That's the physics of it, and that's why we have to purify the body. And then it's not just about purifying the body, you know, because the intention is to desire something different. And probably the best way that I can explain that is the whole concept of kind of like the way C.S. Lewis explained it, you know, that today with the price of gasoline being so expensive, we could save a lot of money putting water in our cars instead of gasoline. But the car doesn't run on water. And the same is true with the human mind-body complex. See, it's like we come in off the assembly line and we look for particles and waves for validation. And what we would have to do is exactly what you would have to do if somebody put water in the gas tank of your car. You know, you couldn't just put more gas in. You would have to get all the water out and then make sure you put gasoline in, because if there were three containers there and one of them was clear, one of them had, you know, like one had a certain color and because that had apple juice in it, and the other one had gasoline and that had a certain color to it, you couldn't just pick the one that had color, because you could put apple juice in the car and the car doesn't run on apple juice. Well, the same is true with the human experience. You know, we can draw from particles, we can draw from waves, or we can draw from this indivisible unified field. But it is our connection to this indivisible unified field that causes this human mind-body complex then to what I call start up. And that's when you begin this progressive cycle.
Okay, great. If we can take a minute, I want to go to and talk about laziness and how that, what does that look like if somebody has an attitude of laziness towards their path to enlightenment? And then, of course, obviously, how are we going to overcome that?
Yeah, again, it comes back to the connection. You know, that if we are drawing from fear and limitation, then we are drawing from a limited source of sustenance. And they use the term laziness, but it's really not necessarily, you know, because you could be trying as hard as you can. Just like, you know, trying to cut a tree down with a chainsaw without starting it up. You could be working like crazy, but you're not getting very far with it. So the term isn't just, you know, you're trying to, you know, do something even if it's wrong. You know, that you're trying to employ a strategy, but also the connection is what gives us this additional power. Just like when the chainsaw starts up, you still have to exert yourself to cut down or cut wood with it, but not nearly as hard as you are if it doesn't start up.
All right, well, before we get to the final obstruction, let's take a moment to hear a word from our sponsors. So, listeners, we will be back with you shortly.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudashyate.
If you are looking for a samadhi-based experience, IPD Kriya Yoga has the goods. A complete yoga program that includes the practices and the process. Starting with the separation from mother, including the labors and tasks of the hero and the return as a whole person. Practice makes perfect only when practice is whole. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. Samadhi, or total consciousness, is experienced by knowing and doing with devotion. Call or click now and get started. 603-929-0303 or www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste.
Purna Maria, Purna Meva Vashishate.
All right, welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. With me is Swami Jayananda, and we are discussing the common barriers to union with the divine, and we're actually on the very last obstacle to attaining enlightenment, and that is selfishness. So, Swami, what does that mean when we're talking about the obstacles? What does selfishness mean? And then let's go ahead and continue to talk about how we can overcome that.
Yeah, the whole idea of selfishness, and again, you know, coming back to the elements, that selfishness is associated with the element of fire. And just like we had talked about with laziness, that which is associated with the element of earth, it's our connection to this indivisible unified field that becomes the one-size-fits-all solution to these barriers. And in Buddhism, they use the mantra, Om Madme Padme Hum. You know, the jewel is in the mud. And in yoga, the term is called brahmacharya, carrier of Brahman. See, when we are drawing from duality, fear and limitation, the exchange of energy is that we are drawing inward. When you make this internal connection, when you literally rebirth your body in the life force, now you have impregnated the seed of your mind. You are becoming something different. Matter and mind come together with truth and wholeness. This initiates this progressive cycle. You know, the term we use is called apotheosis, this process of the individual becoming divine. With that internal connection comes the expansion of your identity beyond the limits of your physical body. See, the Christian concept of love thy neighbor as thyself is very different when you are doing it from a position of conduct, looking for some sort of reward, as opposed to if you recognize that the same soul that's animating you is animating me, that on a spirit level, we're all one. And what I'm putting out is what I'm getting back, and I like myself. That has a completely different dynamic. than when you still see yourself as a separate entity and you're disconnected from this indivisible unified field. And then, again, the way that we overcome all of these barriers, all of these obstacles, is through the development of our physical and our mental functions. You know, your physical functions, strength, flexibility, balance, endurance. Your mental functions, perception, reason, memory, intuition. That's why yoga is a practice. But one of the things that we talk about, and especially like we talked about this week in our Spiritual Advance, week 17, practice makes perfect only when practice is perfect. Now, the origins of the word perfect is purna, meaning whole.
Just like when we chant on Sunday night, when we chant the Ishad Upanishad, that word comes up quite a bit when we do that chant, right?
Yeah, when we're chanting the Ishad Upanishad, the whole thing of, yeah. And the word purna, like I said, means to be whole, perfect. To be a perfect human being is to be, you know, a whole person, to become, or what we would call, a human in the adult state, which is now you're a whole person. But that requires us to change things from the way they started out. That's what yoga is. It's instruction to separate from one source of sustenance, reconnect to another source of sustenance. That's what the origins of religions were. Before this split between science and religion, you know, people in the religious communities, I think, might have had a better understanding of the intention of religion, which means to relink. But now, with the split between science and religion, the institutions that have taken over our religions, we are now substituting this intellectual devotional mirage for true spiritual reality. We're not employing the instructions in a way that would yield the return that we're trying to get. You know, basically, the change doesn't go deep enough.
You probably just answered my next question in our description. We were going to talk about the misconceptions of being spiritual.
Yeah, that has permeated our civilization, and now, you know, now we have even dissected and compartmentalized that to, you know, now we have recognized that our religions aren't working, so now we have coined a different phrase of being spiritual. I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual, without any real clear distinction between, you know, what's the difference other than one sounds different. You know, by the same token, I mean, we think that by calling a particular exercise yoga, that now we have attached all of these false claims and exaggerated promises to it. Now, again, a lot of this stuff works basically because of what we call the placebo effect. You know, that even when they're doing double-blind studies in the medical community, everything has a 37.5% chance of being successful. You know, whether it's a high-powered, you know, new medical breakthrough or, you know, a sugar pill, you know, they both can get the same return. Why? And basically what we've done is we've taken all of the ambiguity out of this. You know, we've resurrected the texts and we started to employ them in a way that you actually see that this wasn't something you believe in, but it was something that you actually did. Even, say, for example, the concept of the word sin. You know, it's not bad conduct. It's missing the mark. It's very different than when we are looking at, you know, evaluating our behavior based on our conduct as opposed to what source of sustenance we draw from. You know, or even the word pray. You know, that people that are looking at it from a misconception, you know, that where their concept of spirituality is intellectual, they talk to this thing called God. You know, whereas when somebody has rebirthed the body in the life force, they pray, not talk, but P-R-E-Y, on this thing called God. And so it's very different. But, you know, now we have, you know, now we have spun off into a lot of, you know, this new age celebrity pseudo spiritualism that, you know, most of these self-made systems, but because we really don't have anything that is tried and true out there to measure it against, you know, it measures up to what we, you know, what we think it's supposed to do. And I think a great movie to see this is that movie Kumari that we watched. You know, the one about the guy that started out to start with this sham spiritual movement and turned out that, you know, he was equally as good as anything that was out there, which I thought was, like, amazing.
Yeah, that was a great movie. I strongly recommend everybody to get that. You can find it on Netflix, and you can also stream it from Netflix. So I think we've answered just about all of the topics that we wanted to cover today. We did talk about the tried and true methods found in the scriptures, I believe, too. And how do those correlate to what is taught at Institute for Personal Development?
Well, again, I mean, we don't water things down. We don't dilute them. You know, we try and hold true to the goals and objectives of a spiritual science, you know, and we really follow the physics of spirituality so that it's not just an intellectual accomplishment and you're not just using the placebo effect, but you actually rebirth your body in the life force, you get the benefit of internal support, calm, and then you also start to use your mind and start to create your reality.
Well, thank you, Swami, for your time. We do appreciate your words of wisdom. So in closing, I would invite listeners out there, you know, visit our website. You can follow us on Pinterest and Twitter and, of course, Facebook. You can access all the archive shows that we've had as well. But, you know, keep those comments and questions and curiosities coming because Swami does enjoy hearing from you and will respond to any questions that you may have. So before I sign off, be sure to listen into our program next week. We're going to be talking about Halloween. It's going to be a few days before Halloween, and we're going to talk about, well, what does that possibly have to do with Kriya Yoga? Any final thoughts before we sign off, Swami?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything. I would like to just introduce the whole thing that we are going to have a solar eclipse tomorrow in Scorpio, and that will be trine Neptune, so it would be a great opportunity maybe to start to assimilate some of these concepts that we are talking about here and how to go from talking about being spiritual to actually becoming spiritual. Apotheosis. And I would wish everybody a namaste.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. I am Lisa Winton with Swami Jayananda signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.